Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Chaf Gimel. Today's daf has been sponsored by Mr. Saul Asa in honor of the Rabbi Tzkin Mitzvot. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilu Nishmat Hacham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Avraham Ben Esther. We are beginning on Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Rishon on the second line. The first word, Etive. Just to review where we got until this point. Our Mishnah said that on Shabbat it is permissible to take a kurnas. Kurnas is a hammer in order to crack open nuts. So there was a big debate in the Gemara. What type of hammer are we talking about? So we saw in yesterday's Gemara of Yehuda said we're talking about a hammer that's designated for nuts in order to crack open the nuts. Now obviously, Rav Yehuda is very stringent when it comes to a kli shemelachto le'isur. Kli shemelachto le'isur is a vessel that is designated primarily for isur. That would be like a regular hammer that's designated, let's say, for banging in nails and for building. So Rav Yehuda says you cannot use that hammer even for a permissible function. The hammer that the Mishnah was talking about was specifically a hammer designated for breaking open nuts. Rava argued on Rav Yehuda, and Rava came along and said, we're even talking about a blacksmith hammer. And even though a blacksmith hammer primarily is used for isur, that would be classified as a kli shemelachto le'isur, as a keli that its primary function is for isur. However, he said, you still would be able to use it to crack open the nuts. Why? Because Rabba says that a kli shemelachto le'isur is permissible litzorek gufo. What does sorek gufo mean? If you use that item in a permissible way, so it's okay. Instead of using the hammer that's designated for a blacksmith to bang in, let's say, nails into a shoe, instead you're using it for what? For banging, but what? Something permissible. Cracking open nuts. So that would be considered sort of gufo. You're using the hammer in its function, but for a permissible usage. So that is the opinion of Rabbah. So Rabbah is a little more lenient than Rav Yehuda. So now the Gemara poses a question against Rabbah. Etibe Abaye le Rabbah. Abaye brought a braita against Rabbah. Meducha. Now, meducha is the mortar. What they did in the mortar is they would place, let's say, garlic, and they would take the pestle and they would grind. So the mortar is specifically used for isur. Its primary function is grinding, which grinding is forbidden on Shabbat. So the braita says, meducha, you have the mortar, im yesh bashum, if there's garlic in the mortar, mitaltelin ota, then you could move the meducha on Shabbat, because since it has something mutad in it, like the garlic, so therefore you can move the meducha, because there is non-mukseh garlic in the meducha, so therefore it's matir the meducha to move. However, ve'im lav, however, if the meducha, let's say, is empty, en metaltelin ota, you're not allowed to move it at all. Now, even though, let's say, I could find a permissible function with this meducha, for example, if somebody wants to turn it over and sit on it, there's a permissible usage for it. And still the braita is telling you that once the meducha doesn't have anything heter in it, it is mukseh. So that comes out that a kli shemelachto le'isur, a vessel that's primary use is for isur, is not movable at all, even for tzorek gufo, even for a permissible function. So that's a question on Rabbah. Rabbah, you just told me that, what, I could take a blacksmith's hammer and use it to crack open nuts, so why can't I move the meducha? Amar leh, so Rabbah answered back, Hamani, who's the author of that braita? Rabbi Nehamyahi. He says, leave that braita. That braita, the author is a Tana called Rav Nehemia that has a very strict view in Mukseh. What does Rav Nehemia hold? The Amar, En kli nital, ela letzorech tashmisho. Which means he holds that on Shabbat, you're only allowed to move vessels for their designated purpose. Which means, according to him, Kli Shemelachto Isur cannot be moved at all, because their designated purpose is Isur. And even Kli Shemelachto Leheter, even permissible items, can only be used for their primary function. So Rav Nehemia is very strict. So therefore he's the author of that statement that says that the Medocha that's empty, you can't move it, leave it. That's a strict opinion of Rav Nehemia. So the Gemara continues to ask questions against Rabba. And we skip the parentheses. Vishavim, and they both agree, who's both? Betelel and Bet Shammai, that have an argument on Yom Tov. The discussion is, they were taking an Eili. Eili is a pestle. That's the item that they use to bang, let's say, the spices, right? So let's say it's a little wide, so they want to take this Eli that they call it, they call that the pestle again, and they want to use it to put meat on top of it and cut meat. Okay, so they're using like a board, okay, in order to cut the meat, cutting board, exactly. So there's a mahloket amongst Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel, are you allowed to use this Eli on Yom Tov to cut meat on it? Bet Hillel says you can, Bet Shammai says you can't. So there's the mahloket. But where do they agree? The Shavim, here's where they agree, Shim katsav alav basar. That if, let's say, you did cut meat on it, on Yom Tov, which is permissible, let's say, you're allowed to cut meat, Sorich Yom Tov, right, for the purpose of Yom Tov, Simchat Yom Tov, She'asur letaltelo. That once you finish cutting the meat on it, everybody agrees the Eli goes back to being mukseh, which means that would betele allowed you to cut meat on it and move it. That's only for Simchat Yom Tov. In order to give you some happiness on the holiday, he waived the mukseh of this Eli and he let you put the meat on it and he let you cut the meat. After you finish doing the meat, even betele says it goes back to becoming mukseh. Why? Because the main purpose of this item is for crushing things. Things that normally would be asur to crush on Yom Tov. So therefore this Eli would be a kli shemelachto le'isur. It's a vessel that's primary function is isur. And what is Bet Hillel telling you? It goes back to being mukseh. Why? According to Rabbah, a kli shemelachto le'isur should be permissible for Sorek Gufo. So this is a question on Rabbah. So the Gemara says, "Savar l'shenuyele k'Rabbi Nehemia." So he wanted to answer this statement again, like Rav Nehemia, meaning that's the answer that he gave to the first braita. He wanted to say, "Okay, this is going like Rav Nehemia, that's strict when it comes to mukseh." However, "Kevan d'shamre lehad amar Rav Hinena bar Shelemya mishemed derav." But when he heard a statement in the name of Rav that said, Hakol Modim, everybody agrees, which means even the rabbis that argue on the Nehemia, which means the rabbis have a more lenient view of Mukseh, but even the rabbis that are a little more lenient on Mukseh, they agree, Besikeh, Zaireh, Umezureh. When it comes to these three items, what are these three items? So that she has different varying views here. Either they're all utensils or instruments that are used by painters, or they're instruments that are used by weavers. That she gives us, for example, the sikeh, he calls them amudim, certain beams that the weavers would use for weaving. Zairei says, Kanim Shebasheti, that would be, let's say, the weft beam that would go across.
Umizure kovid elyon v'tachton. They would be like the beams that were used, let's say, the top beam and the lower beam, where they would raise and lower in order to do the weaving process. In any event, each of these items, what are the common denominator between the sikeh and the zayre and the mizure? Well, all of them are kedish belachto leisur, right? They all are designated function is isur. You can't weave on Shabbat. And if you want to say they're painter's items, you can't paint on Shabbat. However, the kevan de kapid alayu, since the owner of these items is makpid, meaning he's very careful of that these items should not be used for anything else but its function, which means the owner's not using these three things for anything else but the weaving process. Why? That she says because they might warp if we use them for something else, and then it's going to ruin the process. It's going to ruin the weaving process. And therefore, miyached lehu makom. They designated a special spot for these items, and therefore it's off limits. Now you're learning a new thing. You learn that there's a kli shemenachto le'isur that everybody agrees is mukseh. Why? Because the owner does not use it for anything but its function. Now, we classify that in the laws of mukseh as mukseh mehamat hesaron kis. Hesaron kis literally means loss, because out of a loss. Now, there are certain items that because of fear of ruining the item, and because they're precious items, to the owner at least, and therefore he's not going to use, let's say, one of these items to crack open nuts. Why? Because he doesn't want to ruin it. He'll ruin the item and now it's not functional anymore. And therefore, even the rabbis that normally agree that a kli shemenachto le'isur can be used for a permissible function, but they agree that certain items like the sikeh, the zeirin, the mizureh, they're off limits totally, because the person designates them in a certain spot and will not use them. So once Rabbah saw this statement, he came along and said, now we can answer the previous braytot. We don't have to come on to Rav Nehemiah. We can come along and say the following. Here too, miyached la makom. Which means, going back to the previous two cases that we had, the meducha and the eli. The meducha, the mortar, a person is not going to use it for anything else but its designated function. And therefore I could say that braita above that said what? That the meducha, if there's no garlic in it, it's mukseh. That's because it's hesaron kis. And therefore even the rabbis will agree. You don't have to say that it's Rav Nehemiah's strict opinion. You can say even the rabbis will agree that it's mukseh because of hesaron kis. And we can say the same thing by the Eli, that nobody's going to use the pestle for anything else but for the grinding, and therefore it's miyached makom, designates a spot for it, and therefore it is going to be mukseh. So what we did until now is Rabbah had his opinion by a kli shemenachto le'isur, which he was lenient, letzore gufo, by the hammer. However, they brought two questions from two braitot. We see that the meducha is mukseh, we see that the ayel is mukseh. So originally he thought to answer both these braitot are going like Rav Nehemiah. But now that he saw that the rabbis even agree that certain kli shemenachto le'isur are mukseh for everything because they're hesaron kis, because they designate a special spot for them, they don't use it for anything. So we could say that those two cases as well, the meducha and the eli, also fall into that category. That's why they are mukseh. But it seems that a hammer of a blacksmith is not designated, let's say, only for its specific use, and therefore you can use it to crack open nuts. Itmar, we have an Amoraic statement. Rabbi Chaya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yohanan. Chaya bar Abba said in the name of Rabbi Yohanan, Kornas shel Zehavim Shaninu. He says that the hammer that Al Mishnah was talking about a goldsmith's hammer. Now, Rashi tells us that even though the goldsmith is very, very careful, he doesn't want his hammer to become ruined because if it becomes a little, let's say, not smooth, then when he bangs the gold, it's going to puncture the gold, because they would bang very thin layers of gold. So he has to make sure that the head of the hammer is very smooth. So really he's not going to use it for other things. But as she says, since it's very easily fixable, I mean, all you do is have to take the goldsmith hammer and bang it a few times on the anvil, and it smoothens it out. So therefore, the Mishnah is telling you that even a goldsmith hammer, you'd be allowed on Shabbat to use it to crack open nuts. The guy is not designating it only for banging out gold. Because, as I explained from Nashi, it is easily fixable. However, the Gemara says, Rav Shaman bar Abba Amar, Rav Shaman bar Abba said, Kurnas shel besamim shaninu. He says, no, our Mishnah is specifically referring to a hammer that's used to crush besamim, spices. Which means, let's say, a person has a perfumery. How did they make perfume in the olden days? They would take different herbs and spices, and they would crush them. So we're talking about what type of hammer can you use to crack open the nuts. Even this, the hammer of the basam, of the person that crushes the besamim. So now the Gemara explains. The Gemara says, Man damar de besamim, the opinion that says that even a hammer of a used to crush besamim is permissible to crush nuts, kol shekin de zehavim. All the more so, you'll be allowed to use the goldsmith, which means the bigger hidush is the besamim. Because normally these guys don't use it for anything else, because they don't want, I guess, the hammer now to have a smell or something, because they really need it to be clean when they crush the besamim. And still he's telling you this, Rabbi, you could use the besamim hammer for crushing. That's all the more so you'd be allowed to use the goldsmith hammer. However, Madamash is a havim, but the one that said that the Mishnah is talking about the goldsmith, about the besamim kapid alayu. But when it comes to the besamim hammer, he's makpid not to use it for anything else, not to give it a smell, let's say, to it, or to ruin it, and therefore only zehabim and not besamim. So it comes out, we have three different opinions on what type of hammer the Mishnah was talking about. Rabba said it was, Rav Yehuda, going back, said it was talking about a regular hammer designated for nuts. Rabba came along and said he was talking about a blacksmith hammer. And now we have two more opinions that go along and say, some say a goldsmith hammer, and some say even a hammer of besamim. Ve'etakush ve'etakarkar. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. Faga is a fig that did not ripe fully yet. And what they used to do is, they used to bury it in, let's say, straw in the ground in order for it to ripen. Again, it was plucked out of the ground already. They would just store it under some straw or hay in order to let it ripen. Now, straw is mukseh on Shabbat. So the question is going to be now, how do you get this fig out of the straw on Shabbat? So Gemara says, Fagayav, an unripened fig, shetamna batebin, and you buried it before Shabbat in the straw, let's say, or the hay. Vacharara, or for that matter, you have a cake. Shetamna, and you buried it in Gehalim. Gehalim would be coals. Okay, we're talking about over here, in order to keep it, let's say, warm. So you buried it in the coals over here. Now obviously you have to say that the coals are not lit anymore. Because if the coals are still lit, then of course there'd be no question you can't go in there on Shabbat. Because you might have to stoke the coals and you might make the fire. So obviously we're talking about where they're in the coals from before Shabbat, they were lit. Now on Shabbat they are extinguished, but they are mukseh. So you want to know, how do you get that cake out from underneath? So comes the Gemara and says, Im migule miksata. If part of the cake or the fig is revealed, meaning you could grab onto it, let's say the top of it is revealed, so you just pull it out and you have no problem. Now, even though by pulling it out, you are going to displace some of the straw or some of the coals. So that she tells you that that is not even considered indirect tiltul. It's not even considered indirect. Why? And I quote you that she's words, he says, "Da'afidu tiltul min atzad leka." It's not tiltul min atzad, indirect. Why? She'en sadik lagbiya atevin. Because you're not even lifting up the teben, which means what you're doing is, you're lifting up, let's say, the fig, right? And what ends up happening, the sides just collapse. They just fall in. Tiltul min atzad means when you're lifting a heter item, you're also lifting with it something yisur. Here you're not lifting anything. Here you're just pulling up the fig, and now the walls of straw that are around it just collapse inside. That's not even tiltul min atzad. Therefore, he says, everybody will say that that's permissible. The Braita continues, ve'im lav. However, if it's not revealed, so now you have to get in there, and the only way to get in there is to move the straw, which is mukseh, asur l'taltela. Then it's going to be forbidden. Comes the Braita and says, Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai omer, Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai taught, tohabim bekush or bekarkar. Kush and karkar, we learned also, were instruments that were used by the weavers. They are pointy items. They're like sharp items that you could be used to pluck the fig out of it. The sharp, pointy item. So he says, you take the kush or the karkar, these pointy weaving items, they look like skewers exactly, and you could just stab the fig and pull it out. Vehen min arot melehen. And the mukseh, either the coals or the straw, they'll move by themselves. Meaning, Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai is being lenient of tiltul min hatzad. Indirect movement of mukseh is permissible according to him. Meaning, I'm going after the non-mukseh item. Okay? So the rule will be, if you're going after a non-mukseh, for example, a fig, and indirectly you moved some mukseh items, it's going to be permissible based on the rule that says tiltul min hatzad litzorek davar hamutar, which is here I'm going after the heter, I need the fig. So if you're going after the heter and indirectly you moved some mukseh, Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai is telling you mutar. Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman comes and confirms and says halakha Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai, the halakha does follow this opinion of tiltul min hatzad, indirect movement of mukseh, letzorech davar hamutar. Therefore, even if the fig is buried in this straw, let's say, you can take the kush or the karkar, go in there, stab it, and pull it up, even though you're pulling up as well the mukseh. Kemra says, lememra, the savar of Nachman, tiltul min hatzad, la shemit tiltul. Rav Nachman just ruled like Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai. Are you telling me that he holds that really tiltul min hatzad, indirect tiltul, is permissible? We have another statement of Nachman. Rav Nachman, hay fugla. Fugla is a radish. Melemala lemata share. Memata lemala asir. You have, let's say, a radish that is plucked out of the ground already. But what? You went and you put it back in the ground before Shabbat to store it there. Now on Shabbat you want to pull it out. Yes, you don't have a problem of being uprooting anything because it's really not rooted in the ground. It's not tolesh. But the problem is when you pull it out of the ground, you're all going to displace some earth, which is mukseh. So the statement of Rav Nachman was, it depends how the radish is placed in the ground. So he writes, he says, Hai fugla, this radish, Milmala lemata, which means it's from top to bottom, meaning if, let's say, the wide part of the radish was facing up and the narrow part of the radish is in the ground, so therefore by lifting it up you're really not displacing anything because the narrow part is in the ground. You just lift it up, the top is wide, so it'll fit right through, nothing will be displaced. However, if you have it the opposite way, if you have the wide part in the ground, right, and the narrow part of the radish above the ground, so now by pulling out the radish, in order for the wide part to get out, it's going to have to displace some dirt, move the dirt. So Rav Nachman says, in that case where the white part is on the bottom, by pulling it up, you're going to have to now move the dirt, asur. Oh, Rav Nachman, you just told me, tiltul min atzad is mutar. It's indirect. How can you tell me it's mutar, asur? So the Gemara says, hadar be Rav Nachman me'ahi. Obviously, Rav Nachman must have retracted that statement of the radish, which means he holds really by the radish, doesn't matter what way it's placed in the ground. Even if the wide part is on the bottom, and by pulling the narrow part, you're going to displace some earth, but therefore, tiltul min atzad mutar. Because really, he holds like Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai, that said that by the fugla, by the fig, you're allowed to put the kush into the ground, pull it up, even though you're moving the straw. Ramzi Gamalan continues, Machat Shelyad. Machat Shelyad li tolba. Right, we learned in the Mishnah that you're allowed to move on Shabbat a machat, which would be, let's say, a needle. Even though a primary function of a needle is, let's say, for sewing, however, if you need to, let's say, take out a splinter from your hand on Shabbat, so therefore that's a heter function, so you can use the machat in order to take out the kotz, to take out the thorn, to take out the splinter. So comes the Gemara and says, Shalach le Rava bere de Rabba le Rabbi Yosef. So Rava, the son of Rabba, sent to Rabbi Yosef, Yelamedenu Rabbenu, our rabbi should teach us, Machat shenital harala o uksa mahu. Let's say you have a needle, but the harara, the eye of the needle, came off, or uksa, or the point of the needle came off. What's the deen on Shabbat? Is such a needle mukse or not? Meaning, a regular needle that has the eye and a point, obviously we judge in the Mishnah, it's not mukse because you could use it to take out the splinters. The question is regarding a needle that is broken. Let's say either the eye of the needle broke or the point of the needle, that's called the orchids, broke. What is going to be the deen? So comes again when I says, Amar le tanitua. So he told him, he said, what are you talking? It's a Mishnah. Machat shel yad li tolba et hakotz. Didn't we say that you could move a needle on Shabbat to take out a splinter? V'chi ma echpat le lekotz. What is the kotz? What is the splinter care? Ben nekuba leben she'era nekuba. Does the splinter care if the needle has an eye or not? So he answered at least part of the question. He said, a needle that's missing an eye, so what? Bottom line, is it still functional to take out a cord, to take out a thorn, let's say, out of the guy's head? Of course. What does the thorn care if there's an eye in the needle or not? Therefore, at least partly he answered his question, that a needle that's missing an eye, it would be permissible still to move on Shabbat, because it is still functional. Etibe. So they brought a question on Rav Yosef. That was Rav Yosef's answer. They brought a braita questioning that. Mahat, you have a needle. Shenital harara o uksa. It lost its eye or its point. Tehora. So regarding the laws of Tum'ah, we know that only a keli has the ability to receive Tum'ah. However, if let's say it's not a keli, just let's say a piece of scrap metal does not have the ability to receive Tum'ah. And even furthermore, even if let's say it was Tum'ah already, once it loses its status of a keli, that Tum'ah goes away. So the Gemara says clearly, if you have a needle and it loses either its point or it loses its eye, Tehorah. So what do you see? It's not considered a keli. So therefore, the rabbi that was bringing this braita wanted to say that just like by Tum'ah, it's not a keli. So for Shabbat also we should say it's not a keli, therefore it should be mukseh. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye. Abaye comes along and says, Tum'ah a Shabbat karamit. You're asking a question from Tum'ah to Shabbat, what's the connection? How could you bring me a question from the laws of Tum'ah to the laws of Shabbat? You're trying to tell me, if by Tum'ah it's not a Keli, by Shabbat it's not a Keli. Abba Yes, there's no comparison. Tum'ah, Kli Ma'aseh Ba'inan. For Tum'ah to be considered a Keli, it's got to be called a Kli Ma'aseh, which is a fashioned Keli. Which means, when the Torah talks about the vessels that mekabel Tum'ah, it says you need Kli Ma'aseh, meaning it's got to serve its function like the normal keli. What's the normal ma'at? It has a point and it has an eye to it. For tum'ah, it has to be a normally fashioned keli to receive tum'ah. And if it doesn't, it loses its status. That's a special deen by tum'ah. However, le'anyan Shabbat, but by Shabbat, mide dehaze ba'inan. To be non-mukseh, all it has to have is a function. And this item, this knee that's missing the eye, it's functional. You're right, for Tum'ah, maybe it's not considered a keli. We have more stricter guidelines by Tum'ah. But by Shabbat, what do we need? What's the guidelines to make it a keli? Has a function. This is about the function. It can still take out a court. So therefore, Abaye comes along and says, no question from Tum'ah to Shabbat. Amar Rava. Rava comes along and defends the comparison between Tum'ah and Shabbat. Rava says, Man de kamotiv, Shapir kamotiv. So the one that asked the question, asked good. Mide le'anyan Tum'ah lav manahu, le'anyan Shabbat nameh lav manahu. He said yes. By Tum'ah, if it's not a vessel, for Shabbat as well, it's not going to be considered a vessel. So comes out, we have a great machlok in here between Abaye and Rava. Abaye came along and said, no comparison. Shabbat, it's going to be considered a keli regardless. Rava came along and said, no, the question is a good question, and if it's not a vessel for Tum'ah, it's not going to be a vessel in Yom Tum'ah. Metibe, for Shabbat. Meti be, the Gemara brings a bright at the question this. Mahat, you have a needle. Ben nikuba, ben she'ena nikuba. Whether it has an eye or not, whether it has a hole in it or not, mutar letaltela b'shabbat. Oh, clear statement now. Now you see a clear statement that says whether it has an eye or not, it's non-mukseh. Velo amru nikuba. When we discussed the eye of a needle, that was only said in relative to what? Ela le'anyan tum'ah bilvad. That was only said for laws of tum'ah. So Rava, what are you talking about? You, Rava, just want to tell me that the laws of tum'ah and Shabbat are equal. If it's not a keli for tum'ah, it's not a keli for Shabbat. You clearly have a braita, Rava, that makes a difference. The needle without an eye, for Shabbat, it's a keli. For tum'ah, it's not. So what are you talking about? Gemara says, Targema Abaye Aliba de Rava. So in an example of intellectual honesty, Abaye answered this for Rava. Which means even though Abaye argues on Rava, however, they pose the question against Rava that makes the comparison, right? And they showed him that we have a braita that shows you they're different. So Abaye says, I'll answer for my colleague. So how did he answer for Rava? Begulme askinan. This braita is talking about gulme. What is gulme? Unfinished items. Meaning, the fellow was making the needle. He was in the middle of making the needle. And what happened? He didn't finish it. Which means before he put the eye in it, he decided now, let's say, to stop at that point. Gulme. It wasn't a finished needle that broke. It was in the process of making a new needle. Now, Zimnin dimimlich alayu umashvelehu mana. Sometimes, when a person's making, let's say, a needle, for example, right? And he didn't put the eye, let's say, in the needle. At sometimes, he'll leave it at that stage and say, you know what? I'll use it like this. So, at a point of making a needle, so it's possible that even without an eye, it'll be able to have a deen of a keli. Rashi says, like to read Rashi inside together, Begulme, Gulme Mahatim, unfinished needles, Ha'ondot Linakiv, that are destined to be pierced, to have holes in them. Dinikuba Nigmera Melachta. Right? Once you make the eye of it, it's finished. Vishena Nikuba, until it has the hole in it, Ena Nigmera Melachta Hilkach. When it comes to Tuma, you didn't finish the item yet. It's not a keli yet. However, le'anyan Shabbat, it'll be considered a keli. Why? Because sometimes, since he'll leave it in that state, so therefore you consider the keli le'anyan Shabbat, but not le'anyan Tuma. However, aval, hecha denital harara. But in a case where you had a complete needle already, and now the eye broke, oh, Oksal, the point broke. Adam zurka leben gerutaot. A person throws away that broken vessel amongst his scrap, which means the scrap metal. Meaning, Rava will say like this, there's a direct connection between Shabbat and Tumah. The laws are equal. You know which case? In a complete needle that broke. In a complete needle that broke, just like by the laws of Tum'ah, it's considered Tahor, so too by the laws of Shabbat, it's going to be considered not a keli. You know why? Because once you have a complete vessel, and it breaks, the normal derech is you throw it away. If it was never finished, then already you can make a hiluk. If it was never finished, you're going to say, well, until you put the eye in it, it's not a keli. And therefore for Tum'ah, it's not a keli. But for Shabbat, you can say it is. You know why? Because you're in the middle of fashioning it. Sometimes you'll keep it in that state to use to take out the splinters. So therefore you can say in the process of making it, there's a difference between Tumah and Shabbat. But once it was made already, and it broke, then already you're throwing it out. So therefore Rava will say, don't ask me a question from this Braita that makes a difference between Shabbat and Tumah. We that was talking about Gulmeh. That was talking about unfinished needles. For Tumah we'll say it's Tahor. It's not a keli until you put the eye. For Shabbat we'll say it is. You know why? Because people will leave it in that state to use it as a thorn remover. However, Rava will tell you, once you made the needle already with the eye and the point, and then it breaks, it's nothing. It's not for Tum'ah keli and not for Shabbat keli. Why? Because you throw it away, like the Gemara says, ben grutaot, amongst the scrap. So therefore, there's a difference between an unfinished needle and a needle that was finished and broke. Comes the Gemara and says, Gemara continues, Asube yenuka. New subject. Asube yenuka means sometimes when the child is born, he comes out of the birthing canal, sometimes his bones get knocked out of place. And what the nurse does is she massages the child in such a way that the bones will click back in their sockets. That's called asube yenuka. Straightening the bones of the child. So the she'ela is that permissible on Shabbat or not? What could be the question? Well, tikkun, you're fixing. And since you're fixing something, you're putting something, bones back in its socket, you're fixing the child, so therefore it would be similar to metaken, fixing something. So the Gemara actually brings a machloket on this. Gemara says, Asube yenuka, we're two lines on the bottom, Rav Nachman asir, Rav Nachman says asur. That's mitaken. The Rav Sheshat share. And Rav Sheshat says, it's permissible. Amar Rav Nachman, Mina Amina. Now where did I get my opinion to say that it's asur? Ditnan. I got it from the Mishnah. En osin afiktuzin b'Shabbat. What is afiktuzin? That is a certain drink that they used to take in order to empty their system out. It was like an enema that they would drink, and this item would cause them to throw up. That she says it wasn't medicinal. The reason why they would do it is in order to empty out their stomach so they can go back and eat and drink some more. Now, the rabbis only made a gezerah when it comes to medicine on Shabbat, because they said that you might come to grind the medicine. However, this item is not a medicine. And still it says in the Mishnah, you can't take this item on Shabbat. It's a fiktuzin. Why? The reason is because it fixes the person. And therefore, Rav Nachman says, I got my source. Just like you can't take this afiktuzin, this enema on Shabbat, why? Because it's fixing you. So too, you can't straighten out the bones of the child because it is fixing him. So you see, there's a concept of mitaken gabra, fixing the person. Then Rav Sheshat, so Rav Sheshat, who says it's permissible, how does he answer this? He says, Hatam lav urhe. He says that by the case of the afiktuzin, it's not the normal thing to drink this potion. And therefore I agree, to take this enema on Shabbat, to drink it, that's going to be asur. However, hacha urhe. However, here it's quite normal that the child comes out and his bones are all out of place. And therefore, by fixing the bones, he says, that's tantamount to feeding the child and giving the child to drink. That's considered a normal procedure. And therefore, he says, afiktuzin asur, that's not a normal procedure. That'll be considered tikkun. But fixing the bones, that's like feeding the child. And therefore, Rav Sheshat says, permissible. Amar Rav Sheshat, mina amina. Now, where do I get to say that it's permissible? Which is, he just now answered the proof of Rav Nachman. But now he needs a proof to show that he himself holds it is permissible. Ditnan, he says, we have a Mishnah. Mahat shel yad litol ba et hakotz. We said in the Mishnah that you're allowed to take a needle on Shabbat, not Mukseh, because you can take out a splinter. Oh, now taking out a splinter, why isn't it considered mitaken? Ella, you see what? There's no such thing as metaken. So just like you can take out a splinter of your body, out of your body on Shabbat, and we don't consider it metaken, so you can also straighten out the limbs of the child. That was his proof. Rav Nachman rejects that proof and says, Rav Nachman, hatam pakid, hacha lo pakid. Meaning that she says, pakid, hakotz hazeh enu mechubar bo. The thorn that's in his hand is not attached to him. Ela mufkad v'natun sham. It's just lying there, but it's not part of his body. You're not mitaken his body. You're just removing something that's not embedded in his body. However, hacha lo pakid. Here, it's not just on the external part of his body, so to speak. Here, by the body, you're actually taking the bones and you're putting them back in their sockets. And therefore, that's considered a much greater tikkun. Which means, just by removing a thorn, that's mutar. That's not part of your body, so to speak. And therefore, you're just taking something externally out of your body. But here, you're actually putting the bones back at the sockets. That's much more serious. And therefore, it's going to be, so therefore, no proof from the case of Ma'a. Comes out, we have a mahloket, Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshat. Is it permissible to place the child's bones back into their sockets on Shabbat? Rav Nachman was stringent, said Asur, Rav Sheshat was Matir. Each rabbi brought their proofs. Comes again, Mishnah continues. Kane shel zetin. This is the pole that they use to mix olives. After you have olives sitting in a vat, so now they would take a stick, they would call this a kanesh zetim, and they would stir them, they would mix them, in order to see if they've ripened fully, in order now to go to the second stage of pressing them to make the oil. So the Gemashna says, kanesh zetim, this stick that's used to turn the olives, im yesh kesher berosho. If there's a knot, they make a knot on top of the stick, mekabel tum'ah. Then it's considered a full-fledged vessel, and it can receive tum'ah as a keli, ve'im lav, but it doesn't have this knot on top, en mekabel tum'ah. It does not have the ability to receive tum'ah. The Gemara will explain this. Ben kach hu ben kach nital b'shabbat. But regardless, whether it has the knot on top or not,
it is going to be a keli for Shabbat and it will be non-mukseh. So the knot only makes a difference for Tum'ah. But for Shabbat, it's non-mukseh regardless. And the Gemara will explain. It's like you have a hollow piece of wood. You have a hollow piece of wood. I'll explain to you. You have a hollow piece of wood. It's open on both sides. By putting the knot on top, you're closing it. Now it's able to hold things inside this hollow area. Without that knot that you put on top, the does not become a receptacle in the sense that it cannot store anything inside, because it just falls out the other side. So for Tum'ah it's going to make a difference, but not for Shabbat. The Gemara is going to explain this immediately. The Gemara says like this. Gemara says, Amai Peshute Keli Etsu Upeshute Keli Ets Ena Mekablim Tum'ah. Which we have a rule. Peshute Keli Ets means it's, you have, let's say, a wooden vessel, right, that does not have a receptacle to it. A wooden vessel that does not have a receptacle area does not mekabel tumah. It's called peshute keli aetz. Now why is that so? My tama dumya desak ba'inan. Because we learn the laws of wooden vessels from the law of a sack. What is the properties of a sack? It's a vessel that's able to hold things. So too, a wooden vessel is only tameh when it's able to hold things. And therefore, the Hiddush is going to be when you have this knot over here, so now it's going to be able to hold things. The only problem is, who's holding anything in this vessel? It's not made for holding anything, but you're doing the stir, the olives. So even if you want to tell me it has a knot, so what? That shouldn't do anything. The knot, you're right, it makes it potentially able to store things in there. But if you don't store things in there, it's like a sack. A sack's property is, you store things in there. What are you storing in the hollowness of this candy? So the Gemara says, Tana mishemed rav nehamya, b'shaas shemapech bezetim, when you're mixing the olives, hofcho v'ro'ebo. What you do is, you want some of the oil to get caught in the stick, and then you take it out and you check the oil to see exactly if the olives are ripened or not. So therefore, that's by design, you want to catch some of the oil. So it is made to be a receptacle for what? For the oil that you are mixing. Look at Rashi. Rashi tells us, Hofcho v'ro'o. Hofcho literally means when you mix the olives, then you check it, you see it. The halal rosho at the top of the stick, shemishtayir sham, some of the oil is going to remain there, al yedeshu pakuk pekeshet. Right, since there's a knot on top, the oil cannot leak out that side. Menasheh menazav menazitim ubodek bo, and he checks that oil, imigiya la'atzor, if now they're reached the time to press them. Vezui lo kibla behalal shelo, right? Ve'im lav she'en keshet berosho. If you're not going to put this knot on top, en hashemen n'itcham, the oil is not going to be evident over there. Why? Mipnei she'en pakuk, because it's not sealed. Vechudo halal, it's all hollow. Hilkach lav mekabelu, it's not made to receive anything. Vali peshute keli aetz, and therefore it's considered a keli aetz that does not have a receptacle. But for Shabbat, regardless, it's going to be non-mukseh. Why? Because it serves a function for mixing. I don't care if it has a knot on top or not. It's still a stick. And the stick has a function to mix the olives. Comes the next Mishnah. Rabbi Yoseh Omer, Rabbi Yoseh taught, Kol HaKelim Nitalim, all vessels one may move on Shabbat, chutz, except for three items. I'm sorry, the Mishnah lists two items, the Gemara will list a third. Chutz min ha-meser ha-gadol, that's a big saw, meser ha-gadol, v'yated shel mahresha. Now the big saw that she tells us is used for cutting beams, that is going to be mukseh, and a yated shel mahresha, that's the
pointy metal item that's used to make the furrows in the ground. As she tells us, Ukeli Gadol, it's a large vessel, Ha'asui Kesakin, it's made like a knife, it has a point on the coming out of it. Shebo Osin Harit Shel Telema Ma'ana, that they used to make the furrows in the fields. Now, what's the reason for these items being mukseh? Because nobody uses these items for anything else but their designated function. So this would be like a Hesron Kis item, which is, even though it's primarily used for Isur, but that's the only thing they're using it for. They're not taking these items and using it for anything else. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rav Nachman, Hay Uchla De Katsre, Ki Yatet Shel Mahresha Damya. He says there's another item that's forbidden on Shabbat. The Gemara is not going to list different items that are mukseh. Well, the first one is called Uchla De Katsre. Rashi tells us it's a metal vessel that looks like a sifter, meaning it's a metal item that she says made out of copper, and it's round, and it has holes in it. Now, what would they do with this metal item that has holes in it? So he says the launderers would use it, and they place it over the garments, and they pour water through these holes, and the water goes into the garments. It's used in the process of laundering. Others explain that it was actually used in order to give the garments a good fragrance, which means they used to put the garments on top of this vessel, and underneath they used to burn, let's say, incense or a smelling fragrant item, and the smoke would go through the holes of this keli, and the clothes that were on top would receive a good fragrance. Bottom line, this item, the Gemara says, is mukseh, because the launderer only uses it for laundering, and he's not going to use it for anything else. That's the first opinion of Rav Nachman. Amar Abaye, harba de ushkape. That's the knife that the shoemakers use, or the tanners use. That knife is going to be mukseh. Vesakina de ashkapta. That's that she says the butcher's knife also is going to be mukseh. The Hatsinat de Nagre. Hatsinat de Nagre is a certain utensil that the carpenter uses. But he doesn't use only, let's say, like a plane in order to, let's say, smoothen out the wood. These items have common denominator. They're only used for their function, and the owners will not use it for anything else. Therefore, the Gemara says, Ki Yateh Shel Mahresha Dameh. It's similar to the Yateh Shel Mahresha of the Mishnah, this item that makes the furrows, and therefore it's going to be mukseh. So while the Mishnah listed two cases, the Gemara adds an additional three cases that are also mukseh. You have the launderer's metal item, you have the tanner's knife, and you have the butcher's knife as well. Tosfot has a little different understanding of the butcher's knife. He learns it's not a butcher's knife, it's the knife that's used to make shechita. That's the knife that's used to actually make the ritual slaughtering. Obviously the shohet does not want to use that knife for anything else, because if he makes a little pegam, a little nick in the knife, then already the knife is basul, he can't use it anymore. So that's the way Tosfot learns. Tanu Rabbanan. Now the Gemara gives us the history of mukseh. Barishona, originally, Hayu Omrim, the rabbi said, Shelosha Kelim Nitalim B'Shabbat. Originally, the rabbis only allowed three vessels to be moved on Shabbat. This is besides forks, knives, spoons, and things that you need to eat with. All other items, the rabbis went to an extreme and said, Mukseh, except the three things. Why? We'll see. What are the three things first? Miksoa shel debela, that's the type of knife that they use to cut the figs. Vizuhama listeran, that's a type of spoon that they would use to take off the film in their pots. Let's say they had like a, when they would cook the pots, let's say there would be some film that would remain in the pots on the top, let's say the foam. So they had this special type of spoon that they would take it out with. That's what she says. Shem kedera v'sakin ketanash al gabe shulchan, and a small knife that they would use in order to cut bread and meat.
So these items, the rabbi said, are permissible.
Now why they say only these three? Because it seems there was a time where Hilul Shabbat was rampant. And therefore the rabbis, in order to bring back and to put back controls that Shabbat will be preserved, so they went and said, you're not allowed to move anything on Shabbat, that'll restrict them and they won't be able to do anything. Except for these three things. But otherwise, everything is mukseh. Then the Gemara says, hetiru. Then they were a little more lenient. Ve'hazru ve'hetiru. And then they became even a little more lenient. Ve'hazru ve'hetiru. And they even became a little more lenient. As the people were being more observant, they were able to, you know, become a little lax in their gezeron. Ad she'amru, until they got to the stage where they said, kol ha'kelim nitalim b'shabbat, all vessels could be moved on Shabbat, chutz min meser ha'gadol v'yatid shel machlesha, except for the large saw and the plowing item. Which means this Mishnah that we have is the final result if all the gezerot were enacted and then repealed, so it ended up without Mishnah. Now the Gemara asks, what was the evolution over here? Well, how did it start? And then you said they were lenient, and they were more lenient, they were more lenient. Amar Abaye, hetiru davar shemelachto leheter letzori gufo. The first phase of repealing their gezerot, after they made everything strict, is okay, Rabotai. A vessel that's primarily used for permissible things, it's called the Kli Shemelachto Leheter, we're now going to allow you to use it for its function. Before that, even a Kli Shemelachto Leheter was asur. They only allowed you the three items, the spoon for the pot, the knife to cut the bread, they allowed you to use the knife to cut the figs, that's it. Everything else was asur. Phase one, when they came back, they said, all right, primary items that are used for heter, you could use them for gufo, for their function. Phase two, they came along and said, now we'll even let you move a kli shemelachto leheter if you need the spot. That's called tzorich mekomo. Let's say the item's on the table, you need to put something there. So we'll let you pick it up, move it, for, not because you need it. Because you need the spot that's underneath it. That was phase two. Ve'hazru ve'tiru. Phase three. Davash shemelachto le'isur le'tzorech gufo in le'tzorech mekomo lo. Then they came and said, all right, even an item that's primarily used for isur will only allow you to use it for its permissible function, but not to move it for its place. Ve'adayin biyado ahat in b'shtei yadav lo. And still, they said, only items that you could lift with one hand. But heavy items that you could lift with two hands, mukseh, regardless of what they are. Ad she'amru, until they came to the last phase and said, kol ha'kelim nitalim b'shabbat, v'afilu b'shtei yadayim. So when our Mishnah says, kol ha'kelim nitalim, it doesn't mean all vessels can be moved on Shabbat. It means even vessels that are heavy, for example, that can only be carried with two hands, even though it's a klishim alachto leheter, the chidush is, it's still okay. Since it's a klishim alachto leheter, even though it's very heavy, we're not going to put a mukseh on it. Or for that matter, a klishim alachto leisur, letzorek gufo, permissible, even though it's heavy that you can only carry it with two hands. That's how Abaye understands the procedure, how mukseh went from being very strict, and then you had the phases of Heter. Amar le Rava. Rava challenges him and says, no. Mecht, let's analyze. Hetiru ketani. The first phase, it says the rabbis were lenient. They were matir something. They allowed something. Mali letzorech gufo, mali letzorech mekomo. How do you split gufo and mekomo? Meaning Abaye made it two phases. Phase one, klishimato le Heter, letzorech gufo. Phase two, klishim alachto lete lesorech mekomo. Abba says, no. You can't split sorech gufo and sorech mekomo. Once they were matir gufo in phase one, they must have been matir mekomo as well. So Rava changes the history over here of how it happened. He says like this, El amar Rava, hetinu phase one, davar shemalachto lete ben lesorech gufo uben lesorech mekomo. Right? So the first heter was what? Heter gufo mekomo. Hazru etiru mehamal etzel. Second phase was they said, not only could you move a kli shemilachto le'eter for its function, or because you need the spot, but you could also move it, let's say, from the sun to the shade. Let's say the item is in a place where it can get ruined, so we're going to allow you to move a kli shemilachto le'eter. You don't need the item, and you don't need the space, but you're just moving it to protect the item. That'll also be permissible. Phase 3 was, they said, that Kilisha Machtoli Isur, you could move for Gufo and Mekomo. You see, Rava doesn't split up Gufo and Mekomo. So it says, In, yes, Mehama Letzer, Lo. But you're not going to be allowed to move it Mehama Letzer. Meaning a kli that's primary function is isud, you cannot move it from the sun to the shemir. The item is feared to be coming lost or broken or ruined, you can't move it. You can only move a kli shematol isud and sort of gufo and sort of mekomo. Va'adayin ba'adam ehad in. But this heter was only if the item can be lifted by one person. B'shne ben ha'adam lo, but it was every item that said it can only live by two people. No, ad she'amnu, until our Mishnah came along and said, kol ha'kelim italim b'Shabbat, all vessels can be moved on Shabbat, afilu b'shne ben ha'adam, even if it's a heavy item that only two people can carry and be permissible on Shabbat, so long as it's following the rules. Kli shemato le'eter, sore gufo mekomo mehama le'tzel, or Krishmatol Isur, Gufo Mekomo Ye, but Mehama Letzel, no. Comes the Gemara and says, Eti be Abaye. Abaye had a question. On Rabbah, Meducha, we learned earlier, a mortar. Right? That's the item that they used to grind in. Im Yesh Vashum Metatelinota. If it has garlic inside of it, we said you can carry the Meducha because of the garlic. Veim Lav, En Metatelinota. But if it doesn't have the garlic in there, you can't carry it. Now what do you mean? A meducha is a kli shemelachto le'isur. Now, according to you, a kli shemelachto le'isur, you should be permissible to carry. I mean, look at Rashi. Rashi says, "En metaltelinota." We're going to read this Rashi. It is seven lines from the bottom. "En metaltelinota." Pishlama ledidi. Abaye says, "According to me, I understand why you can't move this meducha." Which means it means you cannot move it. Meaning, what do you mean you can't move it? You're not going to be able to move it for mekoma. Because Abaye says, sorek mekoma by a klishmatol isur is asur. But according to you, Rabbah, that says a klishmatol isur is mutar, ben le tzorek gufo, ben le tzorek mekoma, what did it mean when it says you can't move it? So he says, hakim am I asking? And I'll tell you what it means. You can't move it from the sun to the shade. I can answer this statement, no problem. Krishmatol Yisur Mahamad Lesel Asur. Etibe. Here's another question. Veshavin. Shim Katsav Alav Basav. If you use this eli, this pestle, and you cut meat on it on Yom Tov. After you cut the meat, we said everybody agrees that what? She Asur Letaltelo. It's forbidden to move it. But yes, according to me, it's no problem. It's Krishmatol Yisur. It'll be forbidden to move it for Gufo and for Mekomo. However, according to you, when it says Asur Taltelo, what do you mean? You say Gufo and Mekomo is permissible. I'll tell you, what is it forbidden? From the sun to the shade. So therefore Rava is able to answer that those cases that said are Mukseh, it means it's Mukseh for the guidelines of a Klishmatol Isur. Mehamal Letzel. Asur, sorek gufo mekomo, mutar. I but it said mukseh, yes, mukseh mahamal itzel, but not for gufo mekomo. Now the Gemara concludes and says, Amar of Hanina, Pime Nehamya ben Hakalya Nishnit Mishnah Zu. The earlier Mishnah that we said, that the rabbis forbade every keli, except for three vessels, that Mishnah was said at the time of the prophet Nehamya. Why? Dichtiv, because in his time it says, Bayamim ahema, la'iti bihuda. Listen to the prophet Nehemiah. Listen to what he said. Nehemiah says, "I saw dorchim gitot b'Shabbat. People were actually going to the wine press, and they were pressing wine, and they were pressing oil on Shabbat. Umevi'im aharemot, and they were bringing bundles of wheat from their fields." And I'm continuing the pasuk. Ve'omsim ala hamorim, and they were loading their donkeys. Ve'af yain anabim utneini ve'chol masa, they were carrying all loads. Umevi'im Yerushalayim ve'yom haShabbat. Imagine that there was a time in Jerusalem where Hilul Shabbat was so rampant, where all the major melachot were being transgressed. So therefore, what does it say? After the Hamya saw such rampant Hilul Shabbat, he came along and they instituted the Mishnah that what? You can't move anything on Shabbat. They went to the extreme and said now nothing is permissible to move in order to limit their movements now. And therefore, once the people started to go back to their Shemirat Shabbat, the rabbis were able to loosen up some of their restrictions until we got to our Mishnah. The our Mishnah said that what? Really, Klishim Nachton Leheter, I'm going to quote Rava. Klishim Nachton Leheter, Mutar, Gufo, Mekomo, Mechama Letzel. Klishim Nachton Leisur, Mutar, Gufo, Mekomo, Mechama Letzel. No, and it doesn't matter whether they're heavy where one person can carry it, or even if two people can carry it, call a kiddie, no matter what the weight is, would be permissible.